Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Good evening and welcome to The Body Politic. I'm Peter Gurevich. Tonight, with just 6 weeks to go until the nation votes for president, we'll take a closer look at the voting records of the two candidates and then a free-for-all on the roles of race and gender in this historic campaign. My first guest is Keith Poole. He is a professor of political science at UC San Diego and co-author of Polarized America, The Dance of Ideology and Unequal Riches. He also created a very important database that records the votes of all senators and all members of Congress since the beginning of our republic. And this summer, he published an analysis of the votes cast by Senators Barack Obama and John McCain. Welcome, Keith.
Glad to be here.
Well, let's start. I think this database you did is very fascinating and very important in our field and for analysis. So let's start with that. We have two senators, so therefore they have voting records. If it were governors, it'd be harder to do. So looking at that, what can you tell us about each of these people? Let's start with Senator McCain. What are you learning looking at the database about him from that?
Senator McCain started in 1983 in the House of Representatives and served three terms. And during this period of time in the House of Representatives, he was basically right in the middle of the Republican Party. And he continued to be right in the middle of the Republican Party after he was elected to the United States Senate. And then later in the 1980s and the early 1990s, when he was embroiled in the Keating 5 scandal, his voting behavior suddenly changed about 1993, and he became very erratic. That is, some years he was very conservative, other years he was very liberal in the conventional sense, and his maverick tendencies really began in the early 1990s, almost 10 years after his congressional service began. Prior to that, he was a very conventional, mainstream Republican.
Well, let's look at those. You used two really interesting words. One was maverick, and the other was erratic. So that seems to be what some of the fighting is about. Senator McCain wants to present himself as a maverick, and people want to accuse him for being erratic. How can we get purchase on that, looking at the voting? Is there any way to do that?
Not really. I probably shouldn't have used the word erratic. It's a little bit loaded, but it is true that you don't see behavior like this. And indeed, since the end of the Second World War, only one other senator, the famous William Proxmire of the Golden Fleece Award fame, had a more changeable year-to-year, Congress-to-Congress voting record. Most members of Congress establish a very specific liberal or conservative identity or moderate and stick with it throughout their careers. Mm-hmm. And so this is an unusual behavior, especially after 10 years as a fairly mainstream Republican, to suddenly start oscillating from left to right is unusual.
Mm-hmm. And is any of that the party itself has changed? I mean, is the meaning of right and left changed in that time? Or?
Yes, it has. The political parties are steadily polarizing to the point where now the polarization between the two parties in Congress is at the highest level since the end of Reconstruction. So that Senator McCain, say, 40 years ago, would have been right of center in the Republican Party, and now he's left of center in the Republican Party. So that the Republicans have steadily moved out to the right. The Democrats, because of the Southern realignment to the Republicans, are much more homogeneous on the left. And they have moved slightly out to the left during the post-World War II period. Mm-hmm. But the big movement has been the Republicans becoming much more conservative.
One more question on Senator McCain before we move to Obama. Are there any issues that you could, can you make any generalizations about on which issues Senator McCain moves to the center of the left and on which issues he stays with the bulk of his party? Let's say over the last 15 years. I don't mean over the whole course of his career.
But well, he clearly campaign finance reform, very unpopular with mainstream Republicans, and he led the charge on that. Mm-hmm. Also, his immigration bill that he co-authored with Senator Kennedy also was very unpopular with most Republicans. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, that was on the left. Mm-hmm. I think he's had a mixed record on taxes. He was a big backer of Ronald Reagan's tax cuts and Ronald Reagan's tax policies. He demurred on the original cuts in 2001 and now supports them. So his record is very mixed. On social issues like abortion, he's been down the line with the social conservatives and has a very consistent record, even though he attempted to criticize Christian conservatives when he was running in 2000.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. That's what's great about looking at the record. We can study it. Well, let's shift to Senator Obama. What do you observe about him and looking at his voting record?
He is essentially indistinguishable from Senator Hillary Clinton. The famous National Journal rating that showed Senator Obama being the most liberal member of the Senate is not correct. The National Journal used only a handful of roll call votes, and if you pick and choose on the roll call votes, you can make anybody look conservative or anybody look liberal. Mm-hmm. Senator Obama is just about in the middle of the Democratic Party caucus, maybe a little bit to the left of the middle of the caucus, but he is to the right of Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, Feingold, and so forth. So he's essentially a very mainstream Democrat in terms of his voting record in the Senate. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a fairly brief record there, but it's very consistent.
Well, so what could we say about, are we asking the right questions? We've looking at the database, you and I, political scientists, we believe in information like that. Is this the right information to be asking? If we want to predict, voters are going to say, what are these guys going to do in the future? Are we looking at the right thing to understand that? Should we be looking at their voting records to try to figure this out?
Well, given that they're both sitting senators, we don't really have a lot of other information we can use. Senator McCain has been in the public eye for a much longer period. We know pretty much what his personality is because of his experience as a prisoner of war in Vietnam and his military service, so that he is probably a bit more predictable than Obama. But on the other hand, Obama has been, his career has been marked by a slow progression from, I think it's fair to say, the far left to the left to the middle left. And so one would expect that if he wins the presidential election, that he will attempt to probably govern more where Bill Clinton did. I think his main difficulty is that the party is, his to his left for the most part, which is going to make it difficult for him to try to build cross-party coalitions.
So do you think party is a good predictor? I have this discussion with people I meet all the time, that what's the predictor? Are you looking at attributes of the person, or are you looking at their party? Your comments last couple of minutes imply party to me. Is that, have I misinterpreted you?
No, I think that the party is the important predictor, because as the political parties have polarized and as the old issues that used to cut across party lines, like civil rights, where both political parties were split internally on civil rights for African Americans, almost all those old issues that divided the parties internally have disappeared. Only gun control, just a little tiny bit, where there's a strong core of Democrats who oppose gun control, and abortion, which still cuts through the political parties, less so than it did, much less so than it did 30 years ago. So that the political parties are much more homogeneous than they have been at any point in the last over 100 years. So that you have to look at the presidential candidates, especially these two who are sitting senators, and how they interact with their political parties is probably going to be the best predictor of how they will govern.
We have to stop now, but we're going to have you come back and talk about what are the causes of these structural tensions of the parties and how can we solve them. Thanks very much, Keith. Next up, the voters say they want change in Washington. So who represents the bigger change? A black male Democrat for president or a white female Republican for vice president? Sorting through identity politics in a moment. We usually talk about issues on this program, but let's face it. The big story out of this election is that for the first time in American history, either the president or the vice president will be someone other than a white man. That alone makes this a great time to study politics. Joining me now are two fully engaged political scientists from UCSD. They are Zoltan Hanel, an associate professor whose book, Changing White Attitudes Towards Black Leadership, was published a month before Barack Obama announced for president, and Marissa Abrahano, an assistant professor whose forthcoming book is called Campaigning to the New American Electorate, Political Knowledge and Civic Learning in Elections. Welcome to both of you. Zoli, let's start with you because you've written on black mayors and leadership and that. What can you tell us about, is the public ready for a black president?
I think by and large the public probably is. So I think there's certainly evidence that race still matters in America, but the sort of, there's also a lot of evidence indicating that the role of race has diminished. So one of the things we've seen is black candidates running for and winning office at all kinds of different levels from the 1960s on forward. And we've seen that in the 1960s, there was a lot of fear, a lot of heated opposition. The average candidate back then would expect to get something like 90% of white voters to vote against them. Once they win office, or if they do win office, they've generally governed in a quote-unquote reasonable fashion. Not much has changed. The average white wasn't hurt by the election of a black candidate. And the sort of the end result is that experience with black leadership has diminished a lot of white fears. Mm-hmm. More and more white voters will vote for black candidates as they come forward. So typically now a black challenger might get a third of the white vote when they win office for the first time. So, and the kinds of campaigns have gotten much less racialized. So we know that race is less important than it was before. What we don't know is how much it still matters. And there's certainly still some signs of some white resistance, some white fear about black candidates. So in survey or in experiments, when you have a fictional black candidate and a fictional white candidate, many more white voters indicate that they are ambivalent or uncertain. We also know that that stereotypes of African Americans exist, and many whites hold those. So the bottom line is there's probably going to be some sort of race effect. And again, the critical question is how much.
We don't really know. Yeah. Marissa, let's talk about gender, and that's another bigly interesting thing, and it was even before Sarah Palin got picked and sure. with Senator Clinton and all that. So what can you say about that, about what's gender role that's playing?
Right. I mean, gender, just as Zoli was saying about race, you know, obviously is another important aspect to identity politics, and we can see just in the polls how positively the Republican Party has reacted to that, women have reacted to that. So, again, you know, this election comes down to, on election day, whether or not women voters, female voters are going to vote based on this identity or whether or not issues are going to trump that. And that's really, I think, coming into the election, what everybody's trying to determine. Just like how whether or not the extent to which race is going to play a role, the same can be said about gender as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things on Governor Palin that I've been curious about is Governor Palin seems to have energized mm-hmm. people in the Republican Party, but what I'm not sure and I would know how to know is it did it energize people who were sort of Republican anyway, who were unsure about McCain and they've gotten enthusiastic. But or has it brought any people over? Are there any people who were, might have voted Democrat who are now, wow, I want to vote for Governor Palin?
I mean, there's been some speculation yeah. that we're having these crossover voters. So women who initially were supporting Clinton, who are now willing to cross over party lines, in fact, and support Palin simply because she is a woman. But I do think that it is energizing the base of the Republican Party. But there is no clear evidence of that yet, but we are seeing some reports where this crossover phenomenon, where women are actually willing to cross party lines in order just to support a female candidate. So mm-hmm. you know, we'll have to wait and see, but I think especially amongst independents and undecided, that's really right. key to whether or not this phenomenon right. is right. taking place.
Right. Well, Marissa, I think you've done work on journalism among Hispanic, stuff like that. What can you say about that? That's another, I mean, there are other, we talk about white and black and male and female, but there are other categories, and there's a lot of Hispanics, which I think is a larger category than African Americans, and there are also Asian Americans and other categories. What can you say about Hispanic Americans?
Well, you know, Latinos and Hispanics have always been considered the sleeping giant, the major swing voter in every presidential election for the past 30 years. And again, especially in the key battleground states of Nevada, Colorado, Arizona, you know, Latinos make up a significant portion of the population. And so, you know, polls so far show that Latinos are heavily favoring Obama over McCain, which traditionally they do favor the Democratic candidate. So that's where their alliances are lined up so far. And, you know, it's probably...
And how would you interpret that? Because I think I'm going to go back to you in just a second, Zoli. But how would you interpret why are Latinos lining up to support Democrats? Is that an identity issue or an economic issue? Or is it cultural, economics?
I mean, obviously Latinos care about, you know, jobs and, you know, these bread and butter issues that for many of them, you know, getting decent wages, having health care, access to health care. And so for many of those types of concerns, the Democrats, you know, traditionally have been the advocates of minority groups and interest. And so they have, you know, that this is why traditionally they've supported the Democratic Party. But we did see in 2004, George W. Bush did make strong inroads within the Latino electorate, gaining 40% of their vote, which was the first time that any Republican candidate's been able to do that. There was some hope initially that McCain and his more progressive stance on immigration reform, that he may be able to persuade Latino support that way. But given the failure of immigration reform in 2006, it doesn't look likely that he can win over Latinos on that particular topic. And then generally the response by the Republicans on immigration back in 2006 has, you know, made it a little bit more difficult for them to try to persuade
to
Latinos.
Use that issue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The only thing I'd add to that too is I think it is probably mostly issues that's driving Latino partisan choices, but there's also, I think, an element of race, or it might even be racial issues. So if you look at, if you ask Latinos whether they think there's a lot of discrimination out there, and many Latinos do think there's a lot of racial discrimination out there, that's very predictive of a of support for Democrats. So there's a sort of core set of issues they care about, including immigration, and there's also race and the Democratic Party being identified as the party of minority interests.
So when you're saying the Latino elector and you're talking about discrimination or race, they mean towards Latinos as well as blacks.
So absolutely,
right.
Yes.
So, yeah. so they feel the object of discrimination. And so, okay. Well, I'm curious about white voters. I think you've done a lot of your work is on white voters. There's a methods question that I don't understand. How would I know? How could I tell methodologically?
I mean, it's
whether
race
is playing a role in somebody.
It's
because
very
they're not
going
to say so.
Right.
If I say, hey, are you a racist?
You're going
to say, no, I'm not a racist.
Right.
Well, how would I know?
There are a few data points, and then you have to interpret from those data points. So if we look at the one thing is you ask people would they vote for a black candidate, and 95% say yes. We might throw that out. If you ask people, do other people in America, are they likely to consider race in a biracial election, half say yes. So most of us, or about half of us, think race is relevant. I'm not sure we know what other people are thinking, but if you look at the exit polls in the primaries, about 2 in 10 people said, on the Democratic side, they said that race affected their decision. So that's another data point. The other thing you can do is sort of compare how Barack Obama is doing among white voters to how previous white candidates have done among white voters. And he's getting about 40, he's polling about 40% of the white electorate. That's less than previous white Democratic candidates have done in the last few elections, about 5% points less. Given that we're in a situation that structurally favors the Democratic candidate, and by that I mean that the economy is deteriorating, you have an incumbent Republican president who's wildly unpopular, and you have an unpopular war in Iraq. Given those factors, you would think that the Democratic candidate would have higher than normal support among white voters. And in this case, he has less than average white support. Now, there's a lot of different things about Barack Obama. One is his race. Another might be his voting record. You might be able to come up with some argument saying that he's too left, although Keith clearly has indicated that he's not that far left. He may be too intellectual. There may be something else about him that explains that gap. But it's suggestive of a racial effect in any case.
Yeah, I was interested. So you would say that the thing comes and it's this idea of what should his expected lead be given the structure of circumstances. And you think it's about 5 points? I mean, go through that. There are these ideas that we have these objective predictors. I remember one called the misery index, you know, how miserable to be.
So
what do those project? If you use those, stripping apart these people, individuals, would we get?
So political scientists actually, we generally are terrible predictors, but if we look at presidential elections, usually...
Speak for yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
In about probably more than 90% of the cases, we can predict who's going to win. 6 months out from the election, just using things like GDP growth. So how's the economy doing? Mm-hmm. And what is the sort of the overall view or approval of the incumbent president? And thirdly, whether or not we're at war and sort of the level of casualties in that war. If you do that in the current circumstances, so if you did it 6 months before November, you probably would have predicted an Obama victory by something over 5 percentage points. There's, with everything in political science, there are different models that predict different levels. And some go so far as to predict a very, very narrow Obama victory. So he, by these models, he should get anywhere from a close victory to a 5 to maybe even a 10% victory. So he's, the polls right now show him marginally ahead. We might expect him to be a little bit more ahead than he currently is. But again, we have many days to go before the elections.
Right, and although my sense was the last two presidential rounds, those models have been less effective. That in 2000 and 2004, those misery models or objective models, there's something happening.
Yeah.
I mean, one way to think of it is to go back to Keith's point about the polarized electorate. So that brings to identity. Does identity really matter to the extent that we're talking about it? My sense, my smell of 2 months out is that we're repeating 2004. The electorate is slipping back into the deep structure of its preferences that it had last time. Gender, race, doesn't matter. Is that right? Is that, what do you think?
I mean,
polarized, yeah.
I agree with Keith's perspective and view that it's just becoming polarized. And yes, these issues of identity are coming into it, but that's all within the structure of this polarized electorate that we're in. Mm-hmm. And in terms of identity, it's happening on each side of the camp. So, you know, race for the Democrats and gender for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. But the extent to which those are going to trump people's ideological mm-hmm. and partisan viewpoints, mm-hmm. at least I think, is not going to happen in this election.
Well, say so. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I would just add, you know, I think that's right. For 80% of Americans or something like that, party dominates, and part of party is issues, and part of party is just an attachment to the party. There probably is 20% of Americans out there who are independent, who are, for different reasons, not aligned with one of the parties. And for them, I think there is an opportunity for race or gender to play a role. And if an election is going to turn on 2 or 3 percentage points, then that independent 20% of the population is critical.
Right. Well, I'd like to ask both of you to comment a little about this fascinating thing of Governor Palin and Senator Clinton. Are they being treated differently? Do the parties handle the role of women mm-hmm. and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable? They seem both very polarizing people. They get strong reactions.
At least relative to the reception, I think, that Clinton received, especially from the media, it's been very different from what Palin has. Overall, I think it's much more positive, not only with the media, but also the public, whereas Clinton was much more critical. I don't know if it maybe has something to do with the name recognition that the Clintons have had, and therefore she was in the spotlight for much longer. Mm-hmm. Also, she was considered to be a Washington insider relative to Palin, who's, you know, relatively unknown in the national scene. And also, I think for many people, they feel like they can relate to her, which, you know, affect and how people feel about candidates is something that we as political science often don't want to admit that matters to voters, but for a large part it does. I mean, much of the reason why, you know, Bush won in 2004, people said, well, he's great, we think that we can have, you know, sit down and have some beer with him. And I think for many voters, they feel the same way with Palin in the sense that they can relate to her, whereas with Clinton, I think it was a much different dynamic. So in that sense, I definitely think that people's attitudes and just their levels of affect towards candidates is playing some role in this.
And I think that's a big part of what this election is in terms of the campaign about. So on one side, McCain does not have the fundamentals and the issues in his favor. So he and the Republicans want to make this a campaign and an election about character, about his character as the maverick, about Palin's character as a reformer. And the Democrats and Obama have the issues on their side, so they want to make the election about the economy and about their positions on these bread and butter issues. And so the election, at least in my view, is a battle over, is it going to be about character or is it going to be about the issues?
I wonder whether there's a mistake in the way we talk about the election, is that we make it sound the voter. But what I'm hearing you saying is that the answers are different depending on which voters, right? Some voters are party, Some people are issues. Some people are personality. Should we be it's verbally hard to do, but should we be differentiating more in it and saying which kind of voter is affected by personality?
I think so. I mean, political science literature going way back has been pretty clear that very few Americans are ideologically driven. I mean, anywhere from 2% to 10%, understand liberal, conservative, and know where the parties are on those issues and have a clear conception of where they fit in and vote on the basis of that. A lot of us, the models or the analysis seems to suggest, are economic voters. So did the incumbent party do well for us or do well for the country? If so, we vote for them. And then there are a lot of us who know even less than that and maybe voting just on our party that we got handed down from our parents or on any weird personality trait that John Edwards spend too much time on his hair or something like that. I think you're absolutely right. There isn't a voter. There are a range of different voters voting.
Different
on.
Kinds of voters, right. Different answers absolutely. For different kinds of voters. Yeah.
And, you know, what we've been talking about, people's experiences, if you're talking about, you know, first or second generation Latino, their experiences with politics are going to be vastly different from someone who's been here for five or six generations. So all those different things factor into ultimately what guides them to make their choices.
One of the interesting patterns in the primary was white voters in states with a lot of blacks were more opposed to Obama. Right. Than white voters in states with right. relatively few blacks. And so there's a, which bodes well for Obama in the general in the sense that blacks are a small proportion of the national population. There's lots of interesting
right.
patterns.
Yes, although, I mean, it's swing state, it's the small states that have very few black people in them and they don't count very much electorally and the big states have more. So kind of any 5 seconds each, a one sentence piece of advice for each candidate. If you were talking to McCain, what would you tell him to do?
I would tell McCain to focus on the issues.
Focus on the
issues. As opposed to personality and character, right. because that's what's good for this country needs. And beyond just winning this election, which is obviously the focus, but this country is hurting.
On the issues. And Obama, what would you tell Obama?
I would tell Obama to get his message out, make it simple, and, you know, make the average American, you know, you need to communicate what it is you're going to do.
Zoli, 5 seconds for you.
For Obama, it's the economy, stupid. And for McCain, I actually differ on this one. I think he plays the role of the maverick and his character and the prisoner of war and rah-rah America and disassociates himself from the rest of the Republican Party.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I have found that fascinating the last couple of weeks is to see him, trying to disassociate. I'm a maverick. I'm not a Republican. I'm a maverick person, so... Well, that's great. Well, I hope we can get both of you to come back and talk about what's going to go on and the whole thing, and it's fun to talk to you. That's it for this edition of The Body Politic. We'll be back next month as the campaign of a lifetime heads into its closing days. I'm Peter Gurevich. Thank you, and good night.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.